Digital Music. Digital Music Trends, episode 96, 25th of February, 2012. Hello everyone, and welcome to Digital Music Trends. This week on the show, an interview with Jay Frank, CEO at label Digsyn, as well as author of the books FutureHit.DNA and Hack Your Hit. Jay was a guest on the show about 2 years ago, and I can't actually believe that it's been that long. And today we're going to talk about his new book, Hack Your Hit, and about his digital strategies at Digsyn. So hi, Jay. It's great to have you on the show once again, and thanks for coming on. How's things?
Oh, things are going great, Jay. How are things about you?
Great, thanks. All good. So let's start by doing a quick recap of what you've been up to in the last couple of years since we spoke.
Well, the last couple of years has been very exciting just because, I've spent a lot of that time promoting FutureHit DNA, and it's been really interesting watching how people have reacted to it and how it's changed the marketplace. Constantly getting stories from musicians, both big people and big producers, down to the tiniest independent artists who have said that they've read the book. And when I always ask them, I said, okay, so you read it, but did you actually see the impact? And universally, people were just like, I'm amazed. And to me, I just think that that's the most important part, because I think it's hard to even remember, but 2 years ago, everybody was so pessimistic about where the music business was going, and people were fighting tooth and nail against digital things, and now we're actually at a point where, to some degree, there's a lot of positivity going around, and the more musicians can see the positive attributes that they can apply to their production and their marketing, the better off they're going to be. And so, last couple of years, I spent a lot of time doing that, and with that, I was working with CMT, which was a country music outlet for MTV networks here in the U.S., running their music strategy, and enjoyed that job tremendously. But I kept having this idea for a new model for a record company called Digsyn, and which is a digital singles label where we actually give away all the music for free. And at some point, I just kept coming back to it as an idea, and with all of the work helping all these musicians make songs more hit-worthy, at some point I think I said, I need to start putting my money where my mouth is and actually open up a record label. And so that's what I did late last year.
Yeah, that's great. And, just to reiterate on FutureHit.DNA, it came out pretty much at the time when we did the interview back then. And so how has it been adopted in terms of, like, both musicians? And I know that it's also being read at some educational institutions as well.
Yeah, no, it's definitely been, there's a couple of dozen colleges and universities around the world that are using it.
That's
in their
great
classrooms on a regular basis. The good thing about it is that it's been one of those things where people have really started to understand through reading it that everything is not just about, how is Spotify going to work, or how does YouTube affect my business? They're all important things for us to be talking about, but the reality is that, it's the music itself and what makes certain songs actually all of a sudden become the thing that is viral, and, in things like in the UK where you have, a guy like Alex Day who, can be completely independent and then out of nowhere have a top five selling single during Christmas time.
Yeah.
There's actual elements to those songs, and I think the smarter musicians are recognizing that, and they're finding at the very least some inspiration through the book. They don't necessarily follow everything to a T, but it gives them the food for thought that provides them that opportunity and therefore through that subsequent financial success.
Of course. And so talking about the new book Hack Your Hit, so what inspired you to write it, what is the angle you started from, and what is your target audience for it?
Well, the angle that I started from on writing Hack Your Hit was that I said, okay, well, music production is half of the battle, but the other half is marketing. And the more I talk to musicians around the world, as I talked about FutureHit DNA, the more I realized that they could grasp the idea of how to make a song and what they can do to improve a song, but they didn't really have a good grasp on how to market that song. And over and over, I even got people just saying, hey, trying to understand how to use Twitter in the first place, and I can't even figure that much out. And I said, there's a real need to talk about what to do, And, I wasn't going to necessarily go with a basic book that just laid out, oh, here's the basics that you can do on Twitter and Facebook. There's a lot of people who have written books and give classes on that very, very well. But, to say what, same approach that I had with Future Hit DNA, what was the deeper psychological reasons behind how people reacted to things, and what are the things that you could do to more likely make your time more productive? You know, working with social networks, it's a real easy thing to just go and say, hey, I will go and open up a Twitter account and just basically market myself on Twitter. But you're not really expanding your audience that much. Versus saying, how can you actually get your music out there? How can you actually get to the right people? And if you're getting to the wrong people, then you're wasting your time. But if you know how to be able to efficiently get to the right people, then you're not only getting results, but you're actually spending your time wisely. And that's and coming up with seeing those ideas and putting them into practice, that was the inspiration behind writing the book.
Yeah. And the concept of hacking comes up again and again within the book. And as you probably know, I've covered a fair amount of hacking myself with all the Music Hack Day coverage as well on the show. Can you just contextualize how the idea of hacking a hit comes to life within the book?
Well, I think, first off, most musicians don't view themselves as being hackers. They're ones that say, hey, I make music and that's what it is. To some degree, musicians also look at hacking as being that thing that, a group like Anonymous does to wreak havoc across the internet.
Yeah.
But you and I both know hacking is actually a very positive thing and produces great results. And how do you come up with, it's all about how do you come up with a solution to an intriguing question and do it in the most efficient way possible. And I realized that that's a line of thinking that most musicians don't apply to their marketing. For years and years, marketing for a musician basically amounted to just a couple of things. Hit the road and play concerts, and send your music to radio stations and hope they play.
Yeah.
And that's it. And if you want to actually get around that, there's so many ways to use that utilizing the internet and utilizing all of the social technology and social media tools that are out there. But you have to know how to do that correctly, and that's where the hacking comes in, because a lot of the tools that are out there aren't designed for musicians, and they aren't designed to necessarily make it easy, but all you got to do is put a good thought to it and ask the question properly, and all of a sudden, a lot of these tools are 100 times easier and 100 times more efficient.
Of course. And one thing that... I know a lot of technology writers and people working within digital writing for books are afraid of is referring to specific services. So they're probably worried about including information that could become outdated as services change, evolve, or also likely go bust. So what was your take on that, on this dilemma or that a writer faces, especially when writing about these particular topics? Because I know that you do mention a lot of current services within the book.
Mm-hmm. I think the answer to that was that I, some things, it took me about a year to write the book, and some of the things were just things that within the scope of my day-to-day interactions, I just said, all right, this stuff's going to be around for several years, so I'm not too worried.
Yeah.
And some of them, I took a chance on a developing startup company that I really feel strongly about, CrowdBooster. Yeah. Being one that I'm particularly fond of at the moment, but I think the other thing is that I'm also taking a new approach to a book and hacking a book.
Yeah.
The book is self-published for a reason. One is because I can be able to nowadays utilize all these tools to get the book efficiently out and get it out into the marketplace quickly. I mean, we're
sure.
I'm on track right now to sell probably somewhere around 500 or 600 books in the first 30 days.
That's great.
Not an earth-shattering number, but in terms of books and book publishing, that's probably in the top 10% very, very quickly. And for a niche-marketed book, that's exceptionally impressive. And part of that is just because I know how to utilize the internet systems and use it in a way that only self-publishing can allow for. So if 6 months, a year from now, I find that too many of the things mentioned in the books went under, a bunch of other tools have come up that are much more useful than the ones mentioned in the book,
yep.
Well, I could just rewrite the book and republish the book, and it'll take me 30 to 60 days. I can get things out very, very quickly and very, very efficiently. That's one of the beauties about self-publishing. So rather than worry about what technology is going to be outdated or not, I basically just said, I'm going to write what I know, and I'm going to write what I feel as of the publication date, January 2012, and if I have to change it for January 2013, so be it.
Yeah, of course. That makes a little sense. Time and time again, one of the things I found particularly cool in the book is that you shift in different chapters between tackling what I would call the artist's real world life and the artist's life in social media. So maybe one chapter deals with how you deal with Twitter searches and finding fans and or finding influencers on Twitter that you can create relationships with to encourage your presence on Twitter as well, and also shifting into how you can have a signifying element to your actual persona, to how you carry yourself in the real world. That can be a conversation starter, for example, so that you can push your music out there. So how do you see these two spaces? Do you think there's a different way to go about behaving in the real world and in the social media world? Or do you think one doesn't have to really split their personality between the two?
Definitely people need to recognize that you cannot achieve success by just one or the other. If all you do is spend all your days online, you'll get a good buzz and a good feel, but you really won't truly find a mass success. Subsequently, nowadays, if all you do is get out there and tour and get in front of people, you can feel really good, but without a presence online, you really won't be able to connect the dots either. You need to be doing both in order to really maximize your success.
Yeah.
So with that, a lot of what I talk about in the book does go back and forth simply because, A, they're important, and B, for musicians who at this point are still a little bit intimidated by something as simple as 140 characters on Twitter, and tell them, no, this is not to be intimidated by. I tell a lot of people that social networking, the optimum word to remember is social, and don't look at it as being different than going to a cocktail party. So, for example, you're at a cocktail party, and you look across the room, and somebody's wearing a t-shirt of a band that you love, you very well could go up to them and say, hey, that band is cool. I like them too. Where did you see them live? Where'd you get that shirt? And then all of a sudden, before you know it, you're talking to somebody new based on a common interest, i.e. the t-shirts that they wore.
Yeah.
Well, social networking is not much different. And instead of a t-shirt, it very well could be that artist is mentioned in that person's profile, or they put up a tweet about being at the show. And then all of a sudden, you're engaging in a conversation. So really, approaching things in a very, very similar fashion is a successful tactic to be able to understand new technologies better and be able to do things correctly.
Yeah.
Then when I go in, and as you mentioned, one of the chapters where I talk about having a signifier and just really making an emphasis to just have something that people can identify with. If you approach that with saying, I'm going to balance both worlds, the digital world and the physical world, it's very easy to say, okay, my signifier is a female artist who says, hey, I'm going to wear this necklace. And then as a matter of course, they say, well, I'm putting up my profile picture on Twitter. I've got to make sure that necklace is prominent.
Yeah.
And it really helps to connect the dots between the two spaces so that there are things that people understand. And through that, it's a subtle thing, but it's an important thing so that there's familiarity that can be established that can help the artist grow.
Yeah, of course. And one of the things that comes up time and time again in the book is the idea of research as well. That's a pretty important part. I think there's about four chapters that are dedicated to different types of research, research for compatible Twitter followers and artists, research for likely conflicts on Google when it comes to song titles or band names, and also the idea of setting up Google alerts to stay up to date with the search terms that concern your act the most. So how much in this globalized digital world where everything is searchable at any time, anywhere, how much does research influence the way an artist first of all names himself or herself, and how they name the works that they produce, so that they actually can be found within this huge amount of information that is out there.
Well, I think that it has an enormous impact. I mean, if you look at, one of the things I talked about in Future Hit DNA a couple of years ago was the rise of artists doing cover songs. Yeah. And, wouldn't you know it, but in the last 2 years in particular, guess what? So many artists are breaking out simply because they're doing a mass volume of cover songs. And one of the reasons why is because it has a high likelihood of being able to come up when you type in a search term of, hey, I like this song. And all of a sudden, something catches your eye that's not the original version that says, ooh, I want to check this out.
Yeah.
Or when you look at the group who just did the Gautier cover, All on the One Guitar.
Yeah.
It was an interesting, unique spin that got so successful that cover got them a deal.
Yeah.
And and part of that is because that buzz probably wouldn't have started if it wasn't for the fact that it was easily findable. And that easily findable methodology was because it comes up in searches. So to me, I think it's very important, from naming a song and naming an artist, by realizing what search is going to have as a competition for that front. Now, it doesn't mean that, you may have something that's competition. You may name your band after a movie that came out 30 years ago. As an example, but you just have to recognize what your competition is and see how well you're going to play into that. As an example, I have one of the artists signed to my record label is an artist by the name of NNXT, and NNXT is music creation software that Propellerheads puts out.
Yeah.
So it's somebody searching NNXT is going to get a lot of results about that software.
Yeah.
On the other side of it, though, is people that like that software are into electronic music, and here I have an electronic music artist.
Yeah.
And because she's the only artist, it's a little bit of diversity in the search results, and therefore she shows up high. It's different than every other result that comes back, and that results in people checking it out and saying, hey, what's this all about? And so her naming actually helped play into describing who she is very efficiently for that particular audience, as well as was able to play off of that search terminology. On the other hand, as I mentioned in the book, is if you put your name and you just decide to name yourself the same name as some really popular football player, let's say, good luck in trying to be found within the noise of that football player's site, the team site, the fan sites, the merchandise sites, et cetera, and you're going to have a really difficult time being found. So it's more of just understanding what your competition is, and most people don't take the time. They just said, oh, I came up with the name. Well, Coca-Cola doesn't come up with just randomly the name when it finds a new soda. They go to a very specific length to make sure that name is going to have the best chance of succeeding in a marketplace. So I think an artist should go through the same exercise, albeit at much lower, cheaper cost.
Yeah, of course. And one of the recommendations you give in the book is, I think it's really important for artists that read it, because there's a lot of tips and a lot of recommendations on there, is not to feel overwhelmed by the recommendations, which may sound a paradox, but it's actually a really good piece of advice, because somebody that starts out and maybe doesn't have that much of an idea as to what the different techniques and different things that they can do are, it can feel like if they have to do everything at the same time, it's just way too much for them to do. And one of the recommendations to give is to try and outline some sort of schedule. They can try different things at different times, one thing at a time, and just see what works for them. I think that's a great way to go about it. And it's similar to, I guess, the way a digital marketing department would work at any normal record label.
Sure. And I mean, look, you and I are both very heavily in the digital music space, and it's part of our jobs, but it's also part of what we like to do, to stay up on every possible new technology and new website that comes out that may actually have an impact on digital music.
Yeah.
And we feel overwhelmed, right?
Yeah.
I mean, how many times do you you go and you just say, geez, I can't keep up with this new thing, and if we're overwhelmed and it's our passion, I mean, you can only imagine what happens when somebody who's one step below. And so we recognize that that's where some of the artists are going to feel. And And the way to sort through it is to just say it's okay not to get to everything. My team, you know, we're obviously using a lot of the techniques in the book to market our acts on Dixin. And part of the infrastructure of the label is part of us giving away free downloads is an ability for us to actually see the marketplace to get some of those analytics to better market the artist properly with the proper targeting. And I tell them, I'm like, look, I can hire 20 more people and we still couldn't hit everybody in the world who fits the exact profile that we're looking for based on the analytics. Yeah. We can only get to so much. And let's not feel overwhelmed by it. Let's just take the best efforts that we can to find the most prime candidates that we can and just keep chiseling away and just keep going after it. And it's the most successful way is to just say, you know, it's like, look, unless you have $5 million at your disposal and 50 people that are working for you, you can't conquer the world. So just try to conquer the portion that's realistic within your purview.
Of course, you know, one thing that I just to close on your label on Dixin, I'm curious to know, you know, how do you find your acts? You know, what is the process considering all the elements that go into it and all the expertise that you have on the digital front?
I think the approach has been varied. You know, we have, as of right now, we have 3 acts signed to our label. One came through a manager who I've known for several years. Another came through an industry friend who I've also known for about a decade. And then the third is somebody that I found on Twitter.
Yeah.
So it's been all over the place. There is no one particular way. You know, we're sourcing some acts through Music X-Ray, which I find to be an efficient way of just looking through a lot of submissions.
Yeah.
But there is, you know, the you know, and you can kind of get this sense with having read Hack Your Hit. It's positioned as being a fully digital book, but it's not 100% digital because, again, if you go all digital, you're not going to succeed. And so to me, our sourcing of talent is a combination of new ways of looking for talent as well as some of the old traditional ways of just, you know somebody who gives you a tip and then you meet that person and they're stunning and just can't believe that nobody's found them yet.
Yeah, and of course, a lot of the digital contacts that actually become really useful in your real life are people that you met in the real life in the first place. I mean, that's why conferences like Medium and South by Southwest are to an extent still very relevant because they actually allow you to meet people in the flesh and then you can connect to them on the different social medias and actually stay in touch with them even if you are on the other side of the world.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've talked to a lot of people when they talk about things in the blogging world and they're like, yeah, sir, you can, you know, and I have, you know, reached out and have great relationships with some bloggers that have been nothing more than just finding each other on social networks and communicate with them. And I've never even talked to them,
yeah.
Let alone met them. But on the other hand, then there's a lot of others that I hear that I find that the great relationships develop because you literally meet them. You can meet them at a bar or you can meet them at a conference, but you meet them face to face, and that gives you the leg up. And so some people say, how exactly did that band get featured? Well, sometimes it's a publicist, but sometimes, you know what, the band just actually went out and got visible and they actually shook somebody's hand.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Well, it was absolutely great having you in the show again. And of course, people should check out Hack Your Hit, which is available on Amazon. Is that correct?
It's available on Amazon, it's on Kindle, it's on iBooks. You can also go to hackyourhit.com and download a free chapter. And Dixin.com is the record label, and all you got to do is go to the site, put in your email address, and we'll give you every release we ever put out for free for life.
That's great. Cool. Well, thanks a lot for coming on the show again, and I look forward to talking to you soon.
Thanks for having me.
Well, that's all for this week. I really hope you enjoyed the show. You can find out more information about the podcast and all previous episodes at www.digitalmusictrends.com. Also, my Twitter handle is at DGMusicTrends if you'd like to get in touch. And I wanted to let you know that I'm going to be at South by Southwest in a couple of weeks' time for the music festival. So if you're going to be there and you listen to the show, give me a shout and it'd be great to meet up, go for a coffee. You know, I always like to meet listeners of the show wherever I can. Have a great week and till next time.